I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio. Do you remember the last time you used a phone booth? Do you even remember the last time you saw a phone booth? It's been a while, hasn't it? It's safe to say that the phone booth is on the verge of obsolescence. Nobody knows this better than Arianna Kelly. She's the author of a book called Phone Booth. In the book, Kelly explores the cultural history of the phone booth, and she talks about what we've lost with the disappearance of these unique spaces. We decided to talk to her, and we figured that, in the interest of authenticity, the best way to talk to Arianna would be to call her from, you got it, a phone booth. There was only one problem. Where were we going to find a phone booth? Well, we reached out to you fans, and you beta fans, or alphas as we call you, came through for us. You helped us find one on the west side of town. So the beta team packed up our equipment, and we headed over to one of Madison's few remaining phone booths. And we called Arianna Kelly to find out more.
Hello?
Hi, Arianna. How are you? It's Doug Gordon calling from one of the few remaining phone booths here in Madison, Wisconsin. Do you have a few minutes to talk?
Yes, I do. I'd love to talk.
Okay, great. Your book about phone booths, which appropriately enough is called Phone Booth, is fascinating. So I'm curious, why did you want to write a book about phone booths?
Well, the impetus actually came from a group called Beta Level, who at the time ran a nonfiction monthly reading series. Each month it was kind of focused around a theme, and there was one particular month where the theme was obsolescence, and someone happened to mention this to me, and I heard the word, and I immediately thought of phone booths. There was actually no gap in my thinking. It just immediately came to mind. I thought of it because when I was in college in the late 90s, there was a period of time in which I only made telephone calls from this one particular phone booth in New Haven. That's the only place I could really bring myself to have any sort of communication with people. That continued when I moved to Ireland, and there was this one particular phone booth across the street from where I worked. And again, it was just the only place I could really have concerted, significant conversations was from this phone booth, this one being in Ireland. And it really, I never really thought about it after that phase passed. It just kind of lived in my memory. And then, but obviously it was incredibly significant in some way. And so then when that kind of opportunity came along, I thought of the phone booth, and I just thought it'd be something that would be really interesting to explore, because given how ubiquitous mobile phones have become in our life, and I was really kind of a latecomer to cell phones, and particularly iPhones and mobile devices. And so it just became kind of an excuse to, I wrote an essay that explored kind of the cultural history of phone booths, and then an opportunity came along for me to expand it into a book, which I did.
Can you talk about those two experiences, what it was like using those phone booths, why that was your main source of communication with other people?
That was just a seminal time in my life. It was a time of transition. I was graduating from college, and then when I was using the phone booth in New Haven, and then when I was living in Ireland, that was kind of my first year away from school, out in college, sort of out in the larger world. And I know that when I was using this particular phone booth in New Haven, those calls occurred after a long period of isolation, community and psychological isolation. And it was just very difficult for me to communicate, I think, in a real, significant, or even very honest way. Mm-hmm. And there are various reasons for that, I think. Maybe part of the impetus for the phone booth is that in my last year, I shared an apartment with three of my closest friends, and so there was a dearth of privacy, and there happened to be a dearth of privacy right at the moment in my life when I was really feeling like I wanted to reach out into the world. So there was this phone booth down the street that I found, and I made the first phone call, and it was kind of this unleashing of all this stuff that I hadn't been saying, I think, for years. So I just continued to go back to that particular place. I think I treated it as, in some ways, as a confessional. And there was something about the particular dimensions of the space and the fact that it was a relatively private space in public that created this kind of emotional space where I felt like I was able to express myself without fear of repercussion in some way. It was a place where I could be honest and not worry about being punished, because I was speaking in a different kind of space. I mean, it was a dirty, ramshackle space, and yet in some way it felt sacred. sacred to the extent that I could communicate more profoundly than I'd been able to do in a long time.
Yeah. The most famous telephone booth has got to be the one that Doctor Who uses, the TARDIS.
It's a lot to take in, isn't it? Tiny box, huge room inside. What's that about? Let me explain.
It's another dimension?
It's basically another dimension. What?
I've been reading up on all the latest scientific theories. Parallel universes.
I like the bit when someone says it's bigger on the inside.
Can you tell me about it and the role it plays in the history, the cultural history of phone booths?
Yeah, the TARDIS is not kind of a traditional phone booth. It's a police box is designed for policemen to be able to make phone calls to the station or kind of record information about what happened. But the fact that that ends up being the Doctor's time travel machine seems really significant in the sense that, and this is not original to me, I've read this, but this idea that he was kind of a policer of worlds, essentially, mm-hmm. and that he's trying essentially to kind of make peace within whatever world he's in and sort of make peace sort of between and among the different time periods he travels through. And so the British telephone box became this sort of oddly appropriate symbol of his job, essentially, or the function he was trying to perform for the world.
Yeah, it seems to me that the TARDIS might have even more cultural significance to us these days, since we would need a TARDIS to go back in time to a period when phone booths were still popular.
That's true.
Yeah. The funniest description of a phone booth is probably made by Ron Burgundy, played by Will Ferrell in the 2004 film Anchorman.
Ron, where are you?
I'm in a glass case of emotion!
One of the most horrifying phone booth scenes in film history occurs in Alfred Hitchcock's 1963 horror film, The Birds. Kind of comes across like a cautionary tale about why you shouldn't ever use a phone booth. The scene in which Tippi Hedren's character Melanie Daniels is in the phone booth and she's being attacked, the seagulls are attacking and breaking the glass as she's in there. What's your take on this scene?
Well, that's absolutely one of my favorite phone booth films, be sure. I think it's really interesting because she doesn't actually need to go into the phone booth to make a call. I mean, she's relatively safe within the diner, and there is a telephone there.
Yeah.
So it's very curious that she actually goes outside and goes into the phone booth. And for me, I just think it ends up being this incredible visual because you see her kind of contorted and twisting and sort of totally under siege.
Yes.
And of course, she's under siege from the birds, but she's also being attacked by internal demons and demons that are kind of actually sort of much harder to see. And I think when you see her, that image of her contorted and twisting and in panic in the phone booth serve a perfect representation of what's actually happening for her inside her head.
You talk about this short Spanish film from 1972 called La Cabina, and I was really fascinated to read about this film. Can you tell me about it?
It's a short film, and it's such a kind of a visual stunt. This Italian guy drops his son off at school, and then he steps into a phone booth, and the door closes behind him, and he can't open it. It's a glass phone booth, so he's perfectly visible to everyone around him. He's going through all these different contortions to try and get out of the phone booth, and he can't. And so, you know, he becomes the sort of the subject, not of empathy, but of ridicule by everyone who's watching him.
Yeah, they're kind of laughing and making fun of him and things, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It does not inspire any sympathy whatsoever, and really nobody tries to help him. And at the end of the film, which is not a very long film, you see this area where all these other people have been sort of caught in the same situation, this particular phone booth, and you see their kind of desiccated skeletons. It's a very odd film that seems like an allegory in some way for the human condition. It does not present us in a very favorable way.
No, exactly. And that ending reminds me of the Monty Python Milkman sketch, the one in which Michael Palin plays a milkman and then Carol Cleveland, wearing a negligee, leads him up the stairs, seduces him, and then she locks him in a room filled with a whole bunch of milkmen, including a skeleton and some really old milkmen. Are you familiar with that sketch?
That's funny. You know what? I have not thought about it in years, but I am. That's an interesting connection.
Yeah. One of the most interesting phone booths is the Mojave phone booth. As you say, mm-hmm. it's one of the first internet memes before the idea of memes even existed. Can you tell me about mm-hmm. it?
Yeah. This is a phone booth that was erected in the 1960s in the middle of the Mojave for volcanic cinder miners in the area. It's a very desolate area. It's very sparsely populated. It appeared as sort of a telephone, just like a lonely little telephone icon on a map. This image of a telephone out in the middle of the Mojave Desert inspired this guy to go out there and visit it, simply because he was really intrigued by the idea of something being in the middle of so much nothing. Not that the desert is nothing, but just kind of, you know, sort of uninhabited by society. And so he went out there, and then he ended up writing an account of it for a small magazine. And this guy, Godfrey Daniels, whom I actually met, read it, and he became really fascinated by it. So he decided to make a pilgrimage out there and became so enamored of this sort of single piece of sort of human existence out in the middle of this vast desert that he ended up making a website devoted to it, ironically enough. It was sort of a labor of love and kind of an artistic project. He'd never really expected, at least initially, to garner any attention. And then all of a sudden, he started getting all these messages from people who had come across it and who then were inspired to make their own pilgrimages out to this phone booth in the desert. As the years went on, people would just go out there and camp out there and wait to answer. The number got out, and people would call it, and people would answer the phone and have conversations, sort of random conversations with these strangers who were calling from across the country and around the world. And it developed this real kind of cult following, and it sort of became this place where people could make these unexpected connections, have these kind of unexpected conversations, and sort of communicate in a different kind of way than they would in their normal life.
Yeah, you describe the thousands of visitors as devotees, as zealous, as adherents of any religious sect, and I found that description very interesting, because you compare the phone booth to a confessional box, and also so many people's nowadays, quote unquote, worship their cell phones. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a connection. I loved the idea of the Mojave phone booth and the story surrounding it, just because they seemed very poignant to me. And
yes,
it seemed like people were coming to this object that had been inscribed with this particular type of significance just by virtue of other people finding it valuable and reaching out of their normal, kind of the orbits of their normal lives to either go to it and just sort of be near it, or to make a phone call to it, or to answer calls that came to it. And there just seemed to be something quite spiritual about that, in the sense that it was sort of this sort of a reaching out, kind of a trying to transcend normal boundaries and create connections that were kind of inherently meaningful just by virtue that they were connecting with somebody that they hadn't connected before. And I just thought that really kind of spoke to the idea of prayer, and how prayer is often kind of described as being a call to the divine, sort of a call out of our normal existence to something else, you know, either in praise or kind of in pursuit of help. And there just seemed to be something so beautiful about these people making these voyages, and even, you know, simply calling the number from the comfort of their own home with the hope, or just kind of the sort of waiting to see whether someone else would pick up.
Mojave Desert. This is it. Fine, thanks.
Do you think phone books could ever make a comeback like vinyl records have? You know, what's old comes back again? Any chance that could happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a lot of ways they actually are, sort of, you know, sometimes literally, but often a little bit more metaphorically. So, and one thing I wrote about that I thought was really interesting is that in the Amish and Mennonite communities, they're actually, which obviously they have a very kind of tenuous relationship with technology, and they're very wary of it.
Yes.
And at the same time, a lot of those communities know that they need to have maintained some sort of connection with the technological world. And so some of those communities are going out of their way to sort of rebuild phone booths, so that they give people these places to talk, but the idea is that it isolates communication and hopefully kind of tempers the effect that it has on the world outside of the phone booth, and sort of helps people maintain their focus on what's really important as opposed to constantly trying to be connected. I know that in, you know, places like Facebook campuses, there are actually booths where there are no actual phones in them, but they are booths where you can go with your cell phone, you know, or even your computer.
Oh, interesting. And kind of recreate the feeling of being in a phone booth. That's interesting.
Yeah, and you know, the need for a private space to communicate has not gone away, right? And in a lot of ways, it's only become more pronounced.
Yes.
a lot of times you give people the space, and now we carry our phones with us, but at least we have the space to kind of exit the kind of the normal flow of things and sort of go into a different kind of space to have these conversations. A lot of them also are kind of Wi-Fi hotspots, so if you're not going to talk on the phone, you can check your email and communicate in a different kind of way. I think the idea is very much alive, and I think people are ever more aware of the need to kind of regulate their relationship with technology and to sort of potentially isolate themselves from kind of the common flow of people around them. And then I also just think that we create kind of our own booths in the sense of the absorption with which we look at our phones now is effectively kind of like a psychological booth that we erect around ourselves.
Yeah, that's very well said. Thanks so much, Arianna. It was great talking to you. Bye.
Bye.
Arianna Kelly is the author of Phone Booth. We called her from one of the few remaining phone booths on Earth.